Well, I'm very prone to body acne, so I probably shouldn't wear body oil, which is why I rarely do. I'm also experiencing a severe breakout on my back
Oh
right now. Shout out to
no.
that.
Welcome to Smell You Later, your favorite podcast about our collective spiraling.
Here it comes.
Every week, you never know what it's going to be. Neither do we. It's a surprise to us both.
I feel like I'm for once like, I don't know if I'm just like mentally well or if I'm so stressed out that I'm fully desensitized to it. But
Oh
either
my God.
way, I'm vibing.
I'm happy for you. He's in his follicular phase.
Yes. I don't know what you just said, girl. Can you smell?
Neither do I.
My vehicular phase?
It's all the phases of the menstrual cycle are like becoming memeified.
Oh.
Basically. Anyway.
That explains the blind spot.
Can I smell? Very little. It just started coming back like yesterday. And I log all this in a calendar now, like when my symptoms, what they're doing. And I'm like, okay, if I don't immediately just run to my ENT for antibiotics,
yeah,
it does seem like the average span of these sinus events is about 2 weeks. And that isn't good enough for me. I don't like it.
We need one of those sort of news theme songs, breaking news for Sable's smell report.
I mean, truly, what's funny is I like got in a fight with my boyfriend and he was kind of
oh,
like,
no.
I feel like every time you can't smell, you're in a bad mood and you take it out on me. And I was like, ah. Couldn't even fault him on that. I was like, you're right, but I hate that you're right.
That's incredibly funny. Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I need to figure this out for the health of everybody around me.
Right, for the health of my relationship.
Yes, but yeah, I think I need to find a new ENT, someone who's not just throwing steroids and antibiotics at the problem.
Do you know how many people would kill for a doctor to throw drugs at them? Girl, take advantage. Sell them on the streets.
Everyone does. That's the thing.
Support
I'm like,
small business.
Okay, maybe the types of drugs that people want thrown at them are the ones that doctors are like, now, wait a minute.
Sounds like you could get Adderall pretty quickly. I'm not setting you up with any ideas, nor do I.
I don't need to start microdosing meth. That's not what I need in my life. But
well,
yeah, my fear of going to a holistic doctor is they're going to tell me some like weird woo shit. They're like, you're holding on to resentments. This is what's causing your chronic illness. And I'm like, listen, I am reporting you to the board.
That's so funny.
But yeah, I'm like, there's got to be a happy medium. I don't know. So far, yeah. It's just my current ENTs and Reddit.
Stay off of Reddit, please.
They are helpful, but
the way you have a Teflon psyche, I get onto Reddit always by mistake, mind you, and freak out. I look at one of those incel comments and I'm like, get me the fuck out of here. Meanwhile,
oh, I stay away from those parts.
It's all those parts.
Mm-mm. It's just me searching the names of medicines into the search bar. Just clicking on relevant subreddits.
God. Anyway, Fragrance, did you... I'm trying to pull us back by the skin of my teeth. Did you get the new... Actually, never mind. I haven't... I just realized I haven't put it on yet, so I can't really talk about it.
Were you gonna say the... No.
No, no. I think I did call in the body oil, though.
I can't remember if we're gonna be allowed to talk about it by the time this airs.
I think you said something that we're definitely not allowed to talk about.
God, stupid ass... Get over yourselves, brands.
Are
just let us
about,
talk about.
Are you talking about?
Oh, no, I was talking about.
Oh,
yeah.
No, I will say the embargoes are getting longer. And I'm like, I respect
Weird.
It, but
Weird.
Also, what is going on here?
Why?
It's like you're tempting fate. These mics come on and it's anyone's guess.
Launch your product. I don't care. Do what you gotta. We're all trying to just live our lives. But I. Oh, did you get the mayonnaise fragrance?
I was going to ask you, did you
call it in? I didn't call it in. I just figured that you would smell it. And if you hated it, you'd bring it to my house and then I would smell it.
You called in the Auntie Anne's fragrance. I called in the mayonnaise fragrance.
Yes. Okay,
and
yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
It's like literally two dumb bitches telling each other exactly. I have it. It's taunting me from my kitchen table.
Okay.
And I have not smelled it yet. I have been blessed with many new fragrances and discovery kits. So it's going to be a long time till I have to rewear anything again, but that is on the list.
Mm-hmm.
And I called it in because the way that the email sold it, I was like, okay, if it was just a one note, no shade, but like Demeter fragrance that smelled like mayonnaise, I'd have been like, fuck out of here. But the way that they sold the notes into me, I was like, I'll give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not happy with
myself. They did make it sound a little bit more thought out.
Yeah. I mean, I know that calling in a mayonnaise fragrance is like very Caucasian behavior, but I'm willing to take that. Should we? And I'm going to ask you this. I was going to text you, but I was like, I can't put this in writing. Should, depending on how the fragrance smells, should we have that football motherfucker on the show? Should we ask?
No.
It'd be funny. I would first have to see how he votes because
yeah.
Whose team are you really playing for?
Who even is? I don't know who people are.
I have no idea. No, I have no idea. Very odd. All very odd.
When I think of football players, I just think of head trauma and the long lasting side effects.
I think of his big asses, but.
Is it just padding? I just assumed it was padding.
I think it's padding and just spending your life being an athlete.
Yeah.
Can't relate.
Every day's leg day.
Literally.
Yeah. I don't know, but they got to do something about that, about the head trauma.
They would do. In the meantime, I will yeah. make, I'll give it the college try with the mayonnaise fragrance, and I'm sure I hate myself for doing so. So, Sable, what do you smell like today?
I'm so glad you asked. I smell like Orabella Nightcap.
Which is the new one, right?
The new fragrance from Bella Hadid. It's her version of a vanilla amber, question mark. It's a vanilla. It's nice. Right. It reminds me of like an elevated Sol de Janeiro body mist.
Okay.
Because it's like very vanilla gourmand, but it has a lot of musky dry woods balancing it out. So it isn't like super, super sweet vanilla. It's almost like a little bit of an ambery, suedey vanilla. It's actually pretty nice. I was surprised. I don't know what I was, but I will say the bi-phase formula. Okay, so like the Orabella fragrances, they're, I don't know, essential oils or something. Mm-hmm. It's like natural. It's a bi-phase oil water formula. So, and it's allegedly that's supposed to make it last longer, the smell, but it's meant to be skin nourishing. I know, obviously, like we're a little bit late to this because they launched a couple weeks ago at this point, but
they're being stingy motherfuckers when they launch, so we're not late. Mm-hmm. They're cheap.
You're late. We're not late.
However, if they want to send me the fragrances, I will retract that statement.
I think the bottles are very cool.
Yeah,
They are copying Mugler's homework, but I'm okay with that.
Mugler wasn't the first.
If you're
going to
copy anyone's homework, copy their homework. Right. But the thing is that with the bi-phase formula, it makes the atomizer like gunky. It's like a squirt more than a spray.
We have talked about this. Can you please not say squirt on this podcast?
It's the only word I can think of.
I ask for very little of you, Sable.
Okay, it's a chaotic spray. It's like a fire. It's like a mini fire hose. And when you spray it on your skin, it's like a splash. I know they say spray it on your skin, but like, people are going to spray it on their clothes. And then because it's half oil, it's going to leave like a weird little stain. And yes, I know that's user error, but you are greatly overestimating your users.
You really are.
So like the concept, I'm okay. You didn't need to do all that. Mm-hmm. You could have given us a weird bottle and the same scent and we would have been fine with that. Honestly, mm-hmm. Maybe she will one day. Who knows? But the scent itself. Nice.
Nice. Okay. I would definitely smell that for sure.
I say this with the caveat that I am smelling it at 30%.
Who handles Orabella again?
I think it's Lead.
Okay, they're not the ones I pissed off, right?
Yeah, no. I honestly don't remember who you pissed off at this point.
I can't keep track at this point. Yeah, no. I'm with you on all of that. I think that the skin nourishing fragrance, mm-hmm. the skin carification of fragrance, how should I say this? It seems legitimate in that, sure, I'm sure those oils are doing something. Like, I'm not saying it's a total hoax or gimmick. I think skin nourishing fragrance as a whole seems a little gimmicky, but yeah, it seems as an idea to track. I don't think I would look to my, I don't think I don't look to fragrance to nourish my skin. I have other avenues in which I can do that, but I would rather this than like a functional fragrance benefit. Not that functional fragrance is bullshit, but at least this, you can point to it and say, it's oily. It's probably going to do something. I don't know.
It's the like function is like skin nourishing, but I'm like, my skin is nourished.
Yeah.
Nourishment of my skin is none of your business. I want you to scent it, not to nourish it.
Yeah. No, I'm cautiously curious about all of this. Curious. And I'm sure they're good. You know what I mean?
This is a backhanded compliment when I say for a celebrity send. But yeah, for a celebrity send, they're a little unexpected. They're a little off the cuff. Mm-hmm. They're not just like a gourmand replica of celebrity scents of yore. They're like a teeny bit more edgy, which for someone like Bella Hadid, I get that.
All I think of is Azealia Banks.
Yes, you are not the doll.
Bella Hadid, you are not the doll. Gigi Hadid is the doll. You are the Cabbage Patch.
Was that? Like, what?
Who knows? Come on the show.
Come Bella on the Hadid. Show, Bella Hadid. She will never.
Not after that.
Certainly not after that. We piss off a different type of people on this podcast.
That's true. Publicist.
But yeah, I'm like genuinely curious what the reception is overall for Orabella, because I feel like there was like when it dropped, there was like a little bit of hype or a little bit of buzz and then nothing. I heard nothing about it after that. I've seen it on zero Instagram flat lays. Yeah, it doesn't feel like anyone's talking about it. I don't know.
Unless she goes into retailers, I'm wondering.
She's in Ulta.
Is she in Ulta? Yeah, that's exactly
it's an Ulta
what I was
exclusive.
Say.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what though? Yeah. Those Ulta girls stay buying shit. So I bet you, if there's already been another release, which I'm sure was already cooked in the books, whatever. Yeah. But I think if she's in Ulta, this probably isn't going anywhere too swiftly. I'm interested, no shade, to see if it's around in 3 years. You know.
Yeah, yeah. I'm also genuinely interested to know if, like, the cynical part of me is like, she was probably approached by an agency or an incubator.
Holy.
Who was like, we know you're into wellness and I don't know, some like esoteric stuff. Would you want to make a beauty product that combines those two things?
I mean, she's a global celebrity. I'm sure she gets approached every day and she probably had her pick of whatever the fuck she wanted to do. You know what I mean? So I'm surprised it took her this long.
Yeah, honestly. But at the same time, this was probably in the works for the past year or two.
True.
Anyway, Tynan, what do you smell like today?
I smell like something I am very pleasantly surprised by. I did not think I would like it at all, and I do. I currently work my way through the Discovery scent, and I might butcher the name of the brand, so please forgive me. It is spelled lowercase D'Anam, Denam.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about that the other day.
Yeah. So one of our devoted listeners introduced me to the brand over the DM because they have this scent called Vietnamese coffee. And I'll give you one guess what that smells like. And I'll talk about that at some point because I famously can't shut up. But I am wearing my way through the Discovery set and wearing the other scents, all of which are, they describe the collection as a love letter to Vietnam. Mm-hmm. This person grew up in rural Vietnam, the founder, and has put out a collection of scents. I want to say there's 8 in reverence to their upbringing in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. The one that I'm wearing anyway is called Harvest Season. And it basically smells like hay. Harvest Season embodies the enchanting spirit of Vietnam's countryside. During the rice harvest season, imagine yourself walking through these rustic lanes, immersed in fields of sun-kit golden straw. The sun shines brightly overhead. The aroma of dying straw fills your senses, surrounding farmer's toil with unwavering dedication, basking in, etc. I was like, okay, here we go. And I am really pleasantly surprised by how much I like this. It is fresh and warm and like lightly earthy. It almost smells soapy, but if you took this sort of feeling that a soapy aldehydic scent gives you and made it smell like sunshine warming summer air in a field. I don't really know, girl.
Oh, I love
but
that.
It's really simplistic and familiar but unique at the same time. It's really quite good, and I expected this to be a sort of one and done, and I can't say I'll rush back to it every day, but it's quite nice in a way that is just unique to me in a way. The top notes are grapefruit, orange, and pink pepper. The heart is rice straw, rose, and violets. In the base is vetiver and patchouli. And frankly, that doesn't even really help. I read that before I put it on, and really none of that pulls up except really the rice straw. And I know that is as much due to the storytelling as it is the notes. But It's just so nice. Maybe as I smell it again, I do get all of it. I don't fucking know. But it is just the sum of all of its parts that creates something bigger. And yeah, it's fresh. It's warm. It's, I don't want to say skin-like. I do not want to say skin-like, but it's tiptoes toward that.
Okay.
In a way. Yeah, I think, man, this could be really widely loved, and I hope that it is. It sort of reminds me of something that Kara would love too. That sort of like fresh, homey, clean, but not sterile scent. It's so nice. I'm so surprised by how much I like this scent. It's really beautiful.
Wow. Oh my gosh, they have a white rice scent.
I wore that yesterday, and let me tell you something, it gives.
I want to smell that so badly.
I'll connect you. They were very eager to send me this.
Oh, it sounds so good. Okay.
Rice, it is good.
Pandan, orris, jasmine, white musk, cedarwood, tonka bean. That sounds amazing. That sounds right up my alley.
It is. And it's like this in that I think that's a little bit more literal. But again, it's really simplistic, really warm. It does give you the rice fantasy, and the rest of it rounds it out and elevates it and gives it a lot more depth. I really enjoyed that. I famously hated Diptyque Le Papier, but this is like the better version of that. I realize that rice and paper are two different things, but it does give you a white musk vibe. Mm-hmm. But white rice does it so much better. I really liked that a lot. Mm. Shout out to Danam. Maybe we should have that.
I feel like there's another Vietnamese fragrance brand, and I don't know if it's the same one. I thought it also started with a D. It might be the same one. Maybe it's not listed. He had a scent that was called White Rabbit. I guess it's not the same guy. I'm like, where is their Instagram? Oh no, it's not the same person. But yeah, that's who I thought you were talking about when you mentioned them a while ago. But now I've learned that no, there are two. There is a different one.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
I gotta get familiar with that guy too, though. Danam also has. I was gonna just say, Pho Breakfast, another one of their scents inspired by pho, is delicious. And for the listeners at home, take everything you get with a bowl of pho, minus the noodles and the meat and broth, and you get it's basil, jalapeno, some onion, like all of the sort of accoutrement. It is delicious. Damn. I guess I have worn four out of the whatever eight. Yeah. I'm 4 for 4 here. Really good.
Now I want pho. Damn it.
I know, same.
I think God I'm just hungry.
Same. Well, saying that, let's get on with the show that is food adjacent.
Yeah, it's a very culinary, agricultural-based brand.
So today we are welcoming Richard Christensen to the show. He is the founder of Flamingo Estate. I'm sure you're familiar, but if you're not, Flamingo Estate is a newer brand out of LA, the LA area. It is a house with a long history, which we'll get into. We'll get into the origin story as well. But right now, at present, they create some food products, including olive oil and coffee and honey. They do a lot of bath and body products, body wash, bar soap, hand soap, some moisturizers, things like that, that with really beautiful fragrances that have really broken through in the fragrance space, as well as some other fun stuff. They do flowers. They do things for the home, girl.
Candles. What else? I don't remember. They sent me a care package around my birthday, and it had a huge tub of honey, like a liter of body wash.
Yeah.
What else? Oh, this really beautiful candle. It was like a bergamot and rose scented candle.
Yeah, they sent me a candle, bar soap. We discussed the body wash they sent me. I'm obsessed with all things peppermint, and I requested the peppermint body wash, and it definitely wakes you up. It is definitely invigorating. It will give you frostbite on your dick and balls. But you know what? I use it every morning. It's worth it. You just got to proceed with caution. But really excited to speak to Richard about Flamingo Estate and how scents really wrap around the entire idea in a really beautiful way. Let's jump into it.
I am Richard Christensen, and I live at and own Flamingo Estate, which is my home, which accidentally became a brand. And we can talk all about that.
I love that. And Richard, we always start off each episode by asking our guest, what do you smell like today?
Ooh, so it's been a busy day. I smell like calendula flowers.
Ooh.
The Mexican marigolds. I've got lots of them growing next to my goat enclosure, let's say. And they're so happy right now. There's so many flowers. And so my hands smell like those. I've been brushing past them all day. I also smell like my goats. I love the way my goats smell. And I guess while we're on the topic of that, I hope I smell like my dogs. People think it's gross that I love the way my dogs smell, but I'm obsessed with the way they smell. And so I've had them on my lap most of the day at home or next to me. So it's a collision of things today. Yeah.
What do goats smell like? I'm curious.
And how many goats do you have?
I have 4 goats. They're so beautiful. And they were a gift. It's such a funny story. The first one was a gift from a farmer who has a thank you gift for helping. Yeah, I think you may know Flamingo started helping farmers out during COVID and to sell their produce. And so as a thank you, I received a goat and Elmer. And then I was like, what am I going to do with this thing? And then it needed a friend, and then that needed a friend. And aww. So now we have 4 goats, and they have cute. A lovely house. And my Instacart bill is enormous because on days like today, they need lots of cold watermelon, and they are part of the family. We love them so much. They're great.
Oh my gosh, giving someone a live animal as a gift is such, you're giving them a job, basically.
You really are. No, that's a lifelong commitment now.
Yeah.
I say to my friends and my partner, I don't want, like, if you ever come over or there's ever a birthday or something, like, I never want gifts. What I want is a plant. I want someone to give that I can smell. And so my garden's full of a big garden, and 7 acres. It's full of trees and plants that people have given me. And I really do think about it as I run past them and brush past them and smell them and crush up their leaves and all that sort of stuff.
Wow. So how long have you lived there? And did you always call it Flamingo State, or was that kind of, as you lived there, you developed the name?
Yeah. So I found it. So I grew up in Outback Australia. My mom and dad are honey farmers. And I found the house that way, coincidentally. And it was you might know it was a teardown, and it was this just wild, crazy garden. And when I saw the garden, I was like, oh my God, you could tell someone once upon a time loved this garden, and it has fallen into disrepair. And I've got big green thumbs, and I was like, one day I'm going to live there. And I took a photo of the garden. I took a photo of the garden. I put it as my screensaver. And I was like, one day I will live in that house. And then years went by and it happened. And so the garden was the first thing we started working on before I could afford to renovate the house. And then when the house finally did get renovated, it's pink. It's a pink Spanish house. So you just called it Flamingo Estate because it was this big pink thing on top of a hill. And then had I known that it would become a brand and it would have the trajectory that it's now had, I would have maybe been more thoughtful. but it's, yeah, that's where it was. And also, you probably know, just for those of people who are listening who don't know, it was a prolific porn studio for 65 years and has had this like really hedonistic, beautiful, sensual past. It's a really interesting property and very strange. And it has had many lives. The porn's the main one, and it's easy to joke about, but it was a pirate radio station and a political advocacy group. And now that I know the history of it, really just like a hedonistic playground for musicians and artists and chefs and just like all the freaks that we need more of. And so it's a really promise that I would restore it and bring that back. I think I have in some ways, and I'm really proud of it. Yeah, it's lovely. Wow.
That's so such cool. Classic Los Angeles lore of like houses having all of these crazy wild lives and like just the stories in them.
Yeah. And I think also that the city really grew up around it. It's hidden in plain sight. It's this giant piece of property in the middle of suburbia, and no one really knew it was there. And it still, people are confused that it could still even be there. And it's just hidden. And the whole city grew up. When you look at the early porn films, and there's like just rolling hills around Highland Park, and you look down towards downtown and it's just green. And that whole valley used to be a goat farm. And obviously today it's just jam packed full of concrete, but it's not that long ago that this was very rural in a way. So it's really interesting.
Before we jump into all things scent and smell as they relate to Flamingo Estate, I want to dig into your past. Don't freak out, but you have a really cool resume of being the founder of Chandelier Creative, an agency that I've had the pleasure of working with, like a very prolific agency with incredible work. And then founding Flamingo Estate, which you just touched on very briefly, and we'll dig into a lot more. But do you just want to give us a top line of how you got from there to here?
From Chandelier to Flamingo?
And even from, I don't know, birth to Chandelier. You know, I think it's a very unique career path, and what you've done with it is so interesting.
It's funny because I feel like it's full circle. I grew up in a farm. My mom and dad are farmers. And I ran away from rural Australia as fast as I possibly could. And wanted to get away from the dirt and the smells and the nature of it all. And I wanted to work in design, and I wanted to live in a big city. And so I'd moved to to Italy, and I worked there for a while in my 20s, and then to Sweden, and then ended up in New York. And I had no training, any kind of creative training. So really just hustled in New York, opened the agency almost 20 years ago. And one foot in front of another every day, all day, and got to work over those years with, we started the agency around my dining table. There was two of us, and one just before COVID when I left, really, we had an office in Hong Kong and an office in Paris, and the company had significantly grown, and I got to work with all those brands I loved and all the people I thought were my heroes. As you might know, this is very integral to what we hope we talk about today. I was just exhausted. I was so tired. I had been the quarterback for 2 decades. I had worked every weekend until 11 o'clock every night. I was so unhealthy. I was so out of alignment. I was just like, I was absolutely exhausted. I was so just depleted. And a couple of things happened in a 2 week period. COVID happened. The agency lost all of its clients. Everyone stopped spending money. You remember that time? It was so confusing. Everyone, we had to let the team go. And it was hard because I'd spent my whole life building a business, and then to see it effectively crumple up in 2 weeks was just, it was unfathomable. And I could feel the business just crumbling under the weight of payroll with so many people. And so then I came to Los Angeles. I was living here at the house, and I just was like, I'm going to wake myself up again. I felt like I had been sleepwalking for years. And it was very much about getting back inside. I wanted to feel sexy again. I wanted to have sex again. I wanted to be vibrant again. And it was very much about smell. I wanted to have hot, long baths. I wanted to just wake up my senses of my taste and my smell and my touch. And so it wasn't so much that I was having a halfway summer, far from it. I was just like taking long baths, and I was cooking really good food, and I was just eating, and I wasn't traveling, and I was in the garden. And we had this wonderful horticulturalist working with us then called Jeff, and he gave me sage to smell. We have so much sage growing there. I used to inhale the sage and the mugwort. And he really taught me about, the first person who really taught me about those really amazing native scents. And from there, just spent this really nice protective bubble of COVID, just getting myself back to life again. And that's how we started making stuff. Flamingo's, at its heart, a very selfish project. I've made stuff I needed to use, a coffee in the morning, candles at night, shampoo and body wash and olive oil, and like just everything I needed to use, we started to make. And largely because, as I said earlier, I had met a farmer the first week of COVID who said she was going to lose her farm because her vegetables went to restaurants and the restaurants had closed. And I was like, oh, no, I know how to sell stuff. Bring your vegetables over. And I think she thought we could sell a dozen boxes of vegetables that first week of COVID. And we sold 150 or something like that, and 300 the next Friday and 600 the next. And before we knew it, we had 50 trucks. And the height of that crazy, we were just moving from warehouse to warehouse. I think at one point we were picking and packing in Universal Studios because we needed a place big enough for all these farmers to bring their produce. And so the business started just so accidentally. It was just very first week of COVID, just helping this farmer out. And then maybe a year goes by and we're like, oh my God, we've accidentally stumbled across this business. And I, by that time, had started to love food. I hadn't really eaten very well for decades because I worked in fashion marketing. So I always thought I was too fat. And so it was just like so excited to eat everything and drink everything and have the best long hot showers and smell everything. And it was just wonderful. And then someone had said, because someone came to sell us olive oil, and I said, no, he said, I hear you helping out farmers. And I said, I am. He said, do you want to buy my olive oil? I was like, no, I don't need any more. And then I was like, wait, maybe we can make soap from it. And so we started making, how we got into the beauty business, if you will. And now that's 95% of what we do. And met a few really interesting people. There was a guy that came on early in that first wave of farmers called Gabriel Nord. He has a biodynamic herb farm in the Carolinas, I think, and just the most remarkable fragrances from his herbs. And Donna Bayless, who's probably the best lavender grower in America. And just these real luminaries of scent and nature. And it was interesting because, as I said earlier, the agency I had worked with, all of the photographers I idolized as a kid, I photographed almost every celebrity I could possibly want to and worked with all the brands I cherished. But honestly, like when I met these people, they really were the most creative people in the world. The people that were growing the lavender or growing the mugwort or growing the sage, it really brought me back to my childhood as on a farm, but also just fundamentally shook me awake. And it really started with the way everything was smelling.
Yeah.
Wow.
I feel it. And I know so many people also had this almost not dumb, but very obvious realization that there's just nothing as satisfying as making something with your hands or growing something from the earth.
Yeah.
And it's the simplest thing.
It really is. I've just finished a book which comes out in December called The Guide to Becoming Alive. And it's 600 pages. And each chapter is about a plant and what it can teach us. And then there's a long interview with the person who sort of personifies that. For example, let me think of a good example. There's a chapter called Work Like Wisteria, because wisteria, that flowering vine, which smells so good, it just grows and it grows, and you can put it in sand and it grows, and you can put it in bad soil and it grows, and it just never stops working. And the interview for that chapter is with Martha Stewart about work.
Oh, God, that's so cool.
And so there's a bunch. Yeah, it's great. And Jane Fonda has an interview in a sort of a chapter about ripening like a peach. And this is people I really loved in the book. There's so many good interviews. And but I mention it just because it was interesting that almost every single person, every one of them, I was like, how did you get here? What did you do? What's the advice? And in different ways, they all said, put your phone down and do something with your hands. Put your phone away. And it really came up again and again. And it was this sort of surprising headline, a through line rather, through the whole book, which was really interesting, that we are drunk on innovation. We're running so fast. We are addicted to our phones. And I think the promise of that technology was that it would give us more time to do things. But in fact, it's just giving us more time to do nothing, just to endlessly scroll. Yeah. And it's interesting. There's a wonderful interview with a farmer in the book, and he talks about time and how what technology has done is it's sped things up so quickly that what we've lost is ceremony. The ceremony of making a good meal, or the ceremony of setting a table, or the ceremony of putting something in an oven, not a microwave. And we need ceremony as people. That's why people go to church. That's why people have social groups. That's why people have family structures. And so I think those things are, the importance of those things can't be understated. I am slightly obsessed with it now, about creating space for ceremony, which is about tasting and smelling things.
Yeah. Ritual is such, I feel like it's such a human instinct, and such a, I feel like it's the type of human behavior that just finds itself in everything you do, even just getting coffee every morning.
But if you're doing it the right way, and I think you need to complete those things in your life, and it's not about having money or being fancy, it's about setting a table or cutting some flowers or breaking bread with someone. I think you can do that, whoever you are. And we need it now more than ever. And I think Flamingo is, the business is really built on that idea. And because I was going through that as a person, I'm just very grateful that the business has exploded. But I think it exploded because people felt that need, or maybe shared my own craving for it as well. I was so lost and I was so upside down. And what centered me was just doing old things, making food and setting a table and running a hot bath. And I say to the people that want to work here now, I was like, please do not come here if you want innovation. We are doing nothing innovative. We never will. This is the oldest thing in the world. Everyone forgot to do it. And that's making things like the slow way and the old way and the proper way.
That just reminded me that's probably, like, that whole sentiment you just expressed just reminds me so much of this. I don't know if you've heard of the trad wife lifestyle research. Wife meaning traditional wife. It's just women who are they're content creators as well, but they're basically like homemakers, and they're broadcasting this like old-fashioned traditional domestic life. And there's a lot of controversy around it, but part of me is like, of course they are. We just went through a decade of girl bossery. We're tired. Yeah. We want to rest.
No, I just bought a great book, The Amish Living or something. It's an old vintage book, and it's just making everything by hand, and it's separate, making your own broom and all that sort of stuff. And I was like, oh my God, this is the life I want.
I don't think I'm at broom yet, but I'll meet you at making dinner.
Okay. I will send you a broom.
So thinking about your business and your passion, rather, and Flamingo Estate covers a lot, from flowers to food to bath and body, like you said, to even a little bit of apparel over the years I've seen. But a lot of things within the lifestyle category, which I probably wouldn't even classify Flamingo Estate as, it's unclassifiable in that way. But we probably have this perspective because of who we are and what we do. But it seems on our end that your fragranced products, your bath and body products have become particularly resonant with consumers lately. Mm. Why do you think that is? That I think you found success in all of your verticals, but I think a lot of us think these sorts of fragrance products when we think of Flamingo Estate?
By far, I think that part of the business, let's call it, the candles and the bath and body products and the soaps, mm-hmm. that is by far the bulk of what we do in volume-wise. I think it's a couple of things. I think, firstly, it's my home. We started making things naively, the old-fashioned way. We used essential oils, and then we doubled the amount of them. And I was obsessive with how things smelt in the beginning. I had really strong peppermint in a bar soap or jasmine or something like that. I was obsessive with the fragrances in the beginning and wanted them really strong. Just for my, I'm not a morning person. I wanted a peppermint bar that just slapped me in the face. I wanted that. And so I think it was maybe just because of, I was interested in that. It transferred into all the other products. I noticed that people were 100% shopping on fragrance profile, which was super interesting. And my general taste in fragrance is always a bit earthier. Like, I'm not a fussy person. I don't really like sweet fragrances. Although interesting, tomatoes, I'm sure we're going to talk about tomato because it's become such a thing for us. But we were in Paris maybe a year and a half ago looking for funding. And we went to LVMH and they were like, what? And they knew of me from my old job, from my old world. And they're like, oh my God, what are you doing here? And why are you dressed like a farmer? And and I was like, oh, I'm here because I promise you, you're going to want to buy my brand one day. And they're like, oh, why would we do that? And I was like, oh, you want to own luxury? Mother Nature is the last great luxury house. You will want to be part of this. And anyway, they laughed me out of the room. But it was interesting. They had someone smell some of the fragrances. And this nose that was in from France. And he said, I have some advice for you. And I was like, oh, why does that? And he's like, I really think you need to develop a sweet fragrance. And I said, you know, I don't really make anything I don't use. And I don't really like sweet fragrances. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, I want you to remember this, that when the economy tumbles or when people get anxious, subconsciously they crave sugar, which is why the billion-dollar fragrances that are sweet, like Victor and Rolf Flower Bomb and things that really crested during downtime, the times of downturn. Which I thought was so interesting. And so when we did, we created this jasmine growing outside my bathroom window, which smells so good. So we did jasmine and rose candle and then a body wash and a hand soap. And it's almost caught up with tomato now. People love it. And I remember in that meeting, oh, there's an election coming. People are going to be craving sugary things. And so I don't know whether that's the truth or whether it's a really good fragrance, but the fragrances are really special. Yeah.
I am a sweet fragrance lover. It's essentially all I like, but I do think that the tide is turning on the gourmand of it all. I do think people are actually, I think the pendulum is swinging over to savory in a way that is interesting to me, even though it's not my first pick, because I think when you think of scent and fragrance, you don't really think savory. I think you think of like florals or earthy or whatever it is, but you don't really think it in that way. And not to say that's what Flamingo does, but I think with tomato, it's earthy to me, but it's bringing you to the kitchen and the garden in a way that I think it's going to.
Yeah. I think the other thing about that is also, I meant to say, is that your earlier question is, think how upside down this business was. Most people want to start something. They're like, oh, I'm going to make a candle. What ingredients do I need to get? We had 125 farms come to us and say, oh my God, I've got 7 acres of this growing. I've got 10 acres of age. I've got 50 acres of jasmine. I've got whatever it is. So if you think about now 120 something farms coming to the front door and saying, what can you make with this? And so I think maybe one of the other reasons we were just absolutely spoiled for choice, it wasn't us going out to find those ingredients. They just came to us and we learned how to make stuff from them. And so if you think about what a sea of riches that was in terms of just like weekly cadence of farmers bringing fennel or wattle flower or these amazing scents that are not, maybe not traditional. They're not the sort of stuff you get from a fragrance house or from a sort of a bulk commodity supplier or something. And so we're just so lucky that we were on the very end of that and getting our hands in the dirt and just tasting and smelling it. It was such a joy. And still is a joy. You know, it's my home. It doesn't feel corporate. And I think that's one of the other nice things. Sorry, I ramble. But
no, that's what we're here to do. It's a podcast. Yeah. You did talk about, you brought up the tomato collection.
Yeah.
Which, as you said, we were going to get to, and here we are. But I think that we're all in our tomato era right now from many brands doing tomato scents, whether it's for body or candles.
Oh my God, I'm so annoyed at it. I saw Mrs. Myers has got one.
It's a Loewe. You're a trendsetter.
Loewe's got theirs. They're hot on the heels of us. I feel like now it's when you know it's in Mrs. Myers, now you're like, oh, okay, we need to crack the next tomato. But in the beginning, no one wanted that candle. Mm. Nobody.
And now you're the benchmark.
Yeah.
I hope so. People love it and obsessed with it, but really, like, at the very beginning, people thought it was so strange. And
I think strangeness, though, is that's the impetus for innovation, at least creatively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, really such a beautiful fragrance, just crushing up tomato leaves and smelling them in your hand. I think we've been talking a lot about it because I think there's something magical happened with tomato that really was remarkable. I don't think it was just that it smelled really good, actually. I think it's also just this beautiful, bright red thing to photograph as well. And so I've been thinking about new scents for next year, and I'm obsessed with capers and that smell.
Mm.
Fennel, obsessed with fennel. But none of those things are going to photograph as well as a tomato will. And we've been thinking a lot about that. I have a couple of, we're just testing this week, actually, a bunch of different things we've been cooking up in the kitchen and figuring out what's the next one. I'm obsessed with cactus flower, which is something I've been looking at. So we're having fun. We're really trying to figure out what the next tomato is. But yes, the complete hysteria around tomato was really something.
I am personally begging you to do, I love tomato just as a vegetable and in any iteration. So thank you for the franchise, but I am begging you to do a fennel.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Do you know what? I'll send you the sample. Actually, I'm making a fennel olive oil for the holidays.
So
that smells so good. I'll send you a bottle of it. It's so good. That's what gave me the idea of it. We infused fennel into olive oil. It smells so good. You put it on a plate and you just dip some bread in it. The whole kitchen smells so good. And I was like, oh, this is weird and this could be great. And so that's an idea I've got.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
I have an inkling that something's going to happen with olive in the scent space.
Really?
It's another polarizing thing. I also feel like martinis have become very back in fashion. We're already olive adjacent there, but also olives, again, they're a polarizing food. People love them or people hate them.
Yeah,
and they're very salty. It's a kick in your taste buds. So
yeah. We did a Negroni candle last summer, which people loved, which was a drink candle, which was weird. But yeah, olive would be interesting.
Yeah.
I also love, sorry to harp on the tomato, but I love the packaging of the tomato collection with, like you said, this bright red abstraction of tomatoes on the label. I saw that and I was like, okay, yes, we are doing something here. It's so good.
Pat Hardy, my partner, does all the design work and we fight endlessly about that stuff. And we're both such visual people and we're both creative directors. And so when we had just finished a big pop-up in the Hamptons and we had all of the packaging there, I joked to him that these sort of large scale activations now, just museums to our arguments, because every argument we have about packaging is out on display. But
that's incredible.
I think that's the other thing. Maybe the other thing about Flamingo that was nice is that no one had come at farming. Like, my parents are farmers. I grew up in a farm. Like, no one had come at it with a design lens. I had spent, Hermes was one of my agency's biggest clients for years. Like, I really understood luxury cues and no one had come at farming and thought this packaging has to be as beautiful as one of those things. And I think about my olive oil takes a year to make. It's from trees that are 150 years old. More time has gone into that bottle of olive oil that would go into a Chanel bag. And so you think about the hours that goes into that and the time that goes into it. And this we could say for a whole other hour conversation, but what gets me to I get so angry when people talk about the cost of our things, the cost of olive oil and this sort of supermarket commodity pricing where but then gets cheaper and cheaper and the farmers get fucked. We cannot do that. We've got to pay farmers really well. And so when I think about the markup on a Chanel bag or a Tom Ford lipstick, and no one seems to worry about it, but when you think about having a slight margin on a bottle of olive oil or a jar of strawberries, people go absolutely nuts. And so it's very interesting. And I feel like half my day now is fighting that battle around the conversation around margin.
It's so alienating to see this. Obviously, it sucks for everyone because people can't afford groceries, but the entitlement to affordable groceries versus people just not caring about climate change and the earth. Yeah. I'm like, come on, guys, we got it.
But also, I think we have to think about this, and this is in my book a lot about we shouldn't be flying flowers across the world. We should not be flying groceries across the world. We should be eating, like Alice Waters is interviewed in the book, we talk a lot about this. We should be eating vegetables that have grown in our backyard or within an hour of where we live. And we need to fix this broken food system by just eating. And we do this flower delivery every Friday. There's a flower subscription. And it's actually, you actually don't think about it often, but it is so hard for us some weeks to get flowers in California that are not flown from South America and have something different every week for people at their house. This week it's proteas. Last week it was big bundles of marigolds, but there's not that, it's challenging. And so, but I'm really like, I'm a staunch believer that we have to stop flying stuff in from across the world. We just have to.
Yeah. It's so hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube after people are like, wait, I can't have strawberries all year round, or like, you know? Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yes.
It makes me think of those really expensive Japanese melons where they grow produce in like the most ideal conditions and then charge $5,000 for a melon.
No, I was just in Tokyo. We're about to launch in Japan. I was just in Tokyo and there was a watermelon for sale at the supermarket for $150.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I was like, wow. And I went to the, I was like, why is this so expensive? And she's like, oh, it's grown in regenerative soil. And I was like, okay, great. Cool. One of my favorite things came from Japan. We did a beautiful soap years ago with Yakisui oil that came from this island, this UNESCO heritage site off the coast of Japan. And the oil comes from very old pine trees. And they don't cut down, what's the island called? It'll come to me in a second, but on this particular island, obviously there's no logging. It's very heavily regulated. And so they just will distill the oil from branches that have already fallen down naturally or something like that. So it's very hard to get the oil. It's very expensive. But it's the most beautiful oil. And I think also because the trees are so old and they're so ancient and the oil is so strong and beautiful. And it's one of my favorite fragrances we've ever done. It's nice.
Wow. Anyway,
so cool.
Yakisugi oil. It's amazing.
I feel like there could be like little flamingo estate around the world where you make a scent from each local harvested ingredient.
Yeah. We do now. Of those 125 farms, many of them are, we've got a couple in Japan and several in New Zealand, and they are around the world. So we will be pulling some different flowers out of Outback Australia. And yeah, not no to that, for sure.
Cool.
We always like to dive into scent as it relates to people's pasts and upbringing, because the fragrance is so formative to so many of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are there any scents or any elements to Flamingo Estate scents that meant a lot to you growing up, or anything from your lives or past lives or whatever that have found their way into the scents that you create?
Yeah. So tomato really was like my grandma's kitchen, and all the tomato there was part of, that was really part of the beginning of that idea. That one, I think this might sound strange, but as a little boy, I was like obsessed with the way my mom's pillow smelt. And we climb into bed with my parents and always like people's sheets smell a certain way. And it was always this really comforting smell. My mom's moisturizer used to always hit her pillow. And it's a really distinctive scent. And my mom and my grandma used to make and sell like this lanolin moisturizer that they would make. Lanolin's an oil that comes from sheep's wool. My mom was in the sun all day long, and she's a farmer. And so she swore and still does swear by this lanolin oil. And so we just made, it's coming out in about a month, an all over rich cream. It's like our first proper cosmetic cream, let's say. And it's lanolin oil and it's Manuka honey, which my dad has been harvesting for a long time. And wattle flower gives it the fragrance. And wattle's the, you call it acacia here or mimosa, but the Australian wattle is it's our national flower, and it's got this very delicate scent. And so this cream, I've been smelling it so much, it gets me really emotional because it really smells like my mom's pillow. And when I was little, and it feels, it's such a like primal, like little boy's memory of mine is like the safety of my parents' bed. And so that's something that I'm really, really excited about. And we tried different versions. They wanted to do a Hinoki one and everyone wanted to do something more strong. And I was like, no, this smells so beautiful to me just because it's such a visceral memory. And so this cream is that, and it smells very much like honey too. My dad found these crazy guys in New Zealand who found the Manuka that I'm sure you know, like grows in New Zealand and a tiny bit of Australia, but it comes from this particular plant that gives it its medical potency. And these guys found this crop of the plant growing on the top of a volcano in New Zealand, Mount Taranaki. It's not accessible by foot, so they have to drop in a helicopter.
Wow.
The hives there to get this like medical grade honey. It's like
Jesus.
Really medical grade honey. You put it on burns and things like that. It's so good for you. And so it's got such an interesting smell as well, which I love. And yeah, I've got another candle idea I've been working on. When we harvest honey at the estate, we have the smoker that you calm the bees down with, and it's just dried lavender that we set on fire. And that idea, that smell of lavender and smoke is really, it's a really funny combo that's really interesting. So I've been like playing around with that a little bit. Yeah, it's nice. And then the one thing I really want to do a Brugmugsia candle. Brugmugsia is the It's like angel's trumpet. It's that hallucinogenic.
Oh yeah,
lily
poison flower.
The poison flower. It smells so good. And then how to do it naturally? I don't know how to distill the fragrance, but it is. It's such a magnificent smell. It's something I also remember from my childhood. And the other flower that we had on the farm when it was cold was Narcissus paper whites, which I love, which we've used in some soaps and things. It's such a recognizable fragrance. And so,
yeah. I remember going to a Home Depot and it was my first encounter with paper whites. They just, because they sell plants there. And I walked past it and I was like, oh my God, this smells incredible. What is this? Yeah. And I had no idea flowers from Home Depot could smell so good.
You know what? That's another nice smell. The international smell of hardware stores.
Yeah.
In Australia, it's called Bunnings.
Yeah.
I was just in, I went on a bit of an adventure trip up to the Faroe Islands up in the Arctic Circle not long ago and was there in the wet of the, and the cold of the climbing the mountains there. And the, we needed to go get rope or something. We went into a hardware store and I said to my friend, oh my God, like this, there is an international fragrance of hardware stores and it smells like hard work and rope and kind of cologne.
Yes.
And like wood chips. And so that's like a dream smell. I love that smell.
It's like sawdust and like dad's flannel shirts.
Concrete.
Yeah.
That's your next candle.
Yeah, it would be a great candle. And I used to climb up in the back of my dad's pickup truck and my dad smoked when he was younger. And so it would smell a little bit like cigarettes and like dirt and I don't know, plants. And there's something musky and grimy about that smell that I also find so comforting. Yeah.
Yeah. Tynan and I, both of our dads are mechanics. So we both grew up very different places, but we both have the same scent memories of an auto body shop or like a bike shop. Just like the rubber and the chemical smell that's like definitely poisonous, but like just weirdly nostalgic and comforting.
Yeah, like fully gave me black lung, but it was worth it. It came with a great scent memory.
Black lung candle. That's interesting.
Exactly. That's going to be next. In terms of what's next, and this is just me being nosy, but you talked about your first cosmetic product with the rich cream. I think Flamingo has made such a name for itself in the fragrance space, but you currently don't have any fine fragrances. And is that something that you think you would ever explore?
Yeah, 100%. I really want to do it. I think it's the sort of thing that you have to do it so well. And we have to figure out our version of that. So 100%. I actually don't wear cologne. I never have. And I, even though I'm obsessed with smells and smell things all the time, it would be easy for us to go into a fragrance house and get some like off the shelf thing and package it. I really want it to be really different and smell really different. So we've just started that process, but it's going to take us a while to get it right and figure that out. Yeah.
Ooh,
I really want to make sure it's really something very special and weird and interesting. Yeah. There's so much stuff out there now. There's just so much stuff. Yeah. And we don't need more stuff. And so I just want one that's really good and funky.
I feel like a body oil would be, it like makes sense in my head, a scented body oil.
We do a couple of body oils already that didn't scent. Yeah, it's interesting. It's so interesting listening to people's feedback. I'd call, every Sunday I sit down and I call or text the top 50 customers of that week. And I do it religiously and I always ask what they think and how that, what do they smell and what
do they think you're a bot?
They do. If I'm texting them, they think it's a bot. Even if I call them, they think it's an AI thing. I tell them that it's my phone number. This is my cell phone. Write it down. But I do it. I always do it. I want to be connected to what the people that buy the stuff and ask them.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. I had this wonderful woman last Sunday who didn't believe I was calling her. And then when she called, with that shock, she had just bought, the reason she was on the list is because she had bought a big number of tomato candles. And I was like, oh, thank you for the, I really appreciate it. It's my home. That means them so much to me. What are they for? And she said, they're for our wedding. And my fiance and I met, and the candle was in the background of all of our early romance. And I felt like it should be the scent of our wedding. Oh. And then I got a wedding invitation this week.
Stop.
So I'm going to go to the wedding. So
I love that. How sweet.
That's so sweet. Now you're like just making friends with all of your customers.
Yeah. It's that all my goats and my dogs. Yeah.
You said something earlier that sort of sprung this question for me and we didn't brief on this. Maybe we can go out on this, but Sable and I talk a lot about capital L luxury, whatever the fuck it means anymore. And I've worked for many luxury brands and Sable and I get pummeled with this onslaught of luxury marketing and whether or not it is or is not luxury. I think that word has been beaten into the ground so much that
it doesn't mean anything anymore. Meaning.
Yeah. And the true luxury brand, of course, doesn't even say the word. I'm just curious, with your 20 years, almost 20 years with Chandelier, working with so many actual luxury brands like Hermes, like you said, and then starting your own, what do you think is the true definition of luxury? I know you talked about how Earth is the last luxury house, but in that sense or the larger sense, however you want to answer it, I just think your POV here would be invaluable.
It's interesting because I feel like I am a little bit making up for my sins of 20 years because I remember I was wheeled in to rescue a lot of brands or redo a lot of brands. And to a certain extent, I was a real bullshit artist. I was a marketing guy. I made up brand stories for people and wrote stories for brands and all that sort of stuff for brands that made stuff in factories. So I think the difference, especially now, I think what I get really angry with this kind of millennial brand, single SKU brand, by someone who's quote unquote disrupting an industry by doing something. And I feel like it's an easy playbook and it's a digital buy and you're, I don't know. I know the marketing tactics of that stuff and it annoys me. There's so many people making things, but that doesn't mean you're building a brand. There's a real difference between selling something and having a brand. And I really do think there's actually an old, for Christmas, Harvey bought me last year, every Hermes catalog ever printed.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was such a nice gift. He spent the whole year just buying them. And then we sat with some wine over the break and we read everyone cover to cover. Wow. And there's this really interesting issue of that catalog in the mid 80s when the brand was its most pretentious. And it said something like, the editor's letter said something like, we are about the collision of the craftsman's hand and the finest materials. And if we are too expensive for you, please remember that these things are exceedingly rare. It was a, we don't care if you can sit with this or not moment. There was this audacity of, this is why it costs this much. It's because it takes time to make it. And so to a certain extent, to loop back to our earlier conversation around ceremony, I think time is, for me, the cornerstone of luxury, because then it's about intention. It's about really the slow, imperfect way of making things. The other thing I've become hyper-obsessed with, a little bit off topic, is this idea of radical inconsistency. And in a world where even our wholesale partners are like, oh my God, like we want your hand wash to smell the same every season. I was like, no, it absolutely shouldn't. Because if it's harvested directly from a farm and those things are all natural in that bottle, it should smell different season to season based on the sunlight or the rain or that sort of stuff. And they get so scared about that. I was like, it should always smell really good, but it should never smell the same. We expect that from wine. Yeah. We expect that from olive oil. So why don't we expect it from beauty products? And so I'm really leaning into this idea of radical inconsistency is also a luxury in a world where we are just, again, hand soap you're probably using has never smelled different in 10 years or 20 years because it's made in a factory. But if it's made in a farm, then we should encourage the weirdness and the inconsistency.
Yeah,
definitely.
It's funny, like natural beauty, clean beauty, just like natural things in general as a lifestyle. People seem to forget that it's not going to be pretty all the time, that it's not going to be consistent or perfect. And it's a tough thing, I think, for a lot of consumers to accept.
I want to get people, I don't want people to just get accepted. I want people to get really excited for it.
Yeah.
Like, can't wait to smell how it's going to smell this season. And that's why I love that we make almost everything in-house in the kitchens here. And I love it that we do small runs things. I had this funny, can I tell you a funny story about it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have this peppermint bar soap which I love, which I made as a sort of to wake myself up, as I said earlier. It's just so packed full of peppermint. And they're big chunks. They're like big soap bricks. And we make maybe 50 or 100 at a time. And I put on Instagram that we had a new batch. And someone bought all of them the same day. And we have had people buy soaps and resell them on eBay and so or somewhere. And so I was like, I got her number from Shopify. And I called and I said, I obviously know you're reselling this stuff. I'll happily pay you more than you paid for it. I want you to make some money from it, but I want to buy them all back from you because I want to control the experience. And I can't do the accent very well, but she's this tech-less woman in Texas. And she's saying, no, honey, I'm not selling your soaps. And I'm like, oh, you're not? And she's like, no. I'm like, why did you buy 50 of them? And she's, I'm using them as doorstops. And I was like, you're using them as doorstops? She says, yeah, honey, they smell so good. And I guess they filled the whole room with peppermint smell. And so I was like, Wait, you have 50 doors?
I know.
Like, yeah, honey, I live in Texas. And I was like, God bless America.
Funny.
That's incredible, actually. Wow.
Wow.
I
love
it. And I think that's, and maybe that's this idea of what I said earlier, waking people up and getting them in their bodies. And all I wanted for myself and still want for myself is that like feeling of just like such surprise and joy that you get from something that smells like so good. And mm-hmm. I have this another, I was thinking before today, like other like scent moments that have been pivotal for me. And one was, can I tell you one other
story? Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Well, 7 years ago, I was climbing up Mount Everest. And there is a little town, Namche Bazaar. It's on the way up. If you're going up to Everest Base Camp, it's a lost little town you go through. It's clinging to the edge of the mountain and it's just cold. And it's like, I was cold. I was wet. I was just aching. And we'd been living on dehydrated food for a couple of days. And it just was like, whoa. And anyway, we get through this little town, this tiny outpost on the way up. And I just smelled this amazing smell of like chocolate croissants. And I was like, my nose is playing tricks on me. This clearly doesn't exist, right? But sure enough, there's a family there that has a bakery on the edge of Mount Everest at high up and above the clouds that's making the best chocolate croissants I have ever tasted. And I got there very early in the morning and I was wet and I just followed my nose to the bakery and this guy had just pulled them out of the oven and he said, would you like one? And I was like, yes, he gave me one for free. And it was this like pivotal moment for me where I was like, oh my God, like that joy, that simple joy of the smell of a hot chocolate croissant when you're in the most like awful place in the world was magic. And so I love that idea of how do we give that feeling to people as well? Also, I think about my mom as a kid. My mom worked so hard. Being as if you're a child of a farmer, there's no harder job in the world than being a farmer. And my parents got up at daybreak and they went to bed late at night. But my mom would come home from work and she would run a bath. My dad and mom would both run a hot bath. And my brother and I would sit on the floor of the bathroom and we would talk to them about their day. And my mom used to use super cheap supermarket soap. I don't know what it was called now, but very cheap soap. But I remember that chalky smell of that soap very well. And just like those soap bars were like her version of luxury. That was the most luxurious thing she gave herself, was a bath full of hot soap bars every night. And I think about our happiest memories as kids were not around the dining room table. Actually, they were on the floor of the bathroom listening to mom and dad talk as each of them had a bath and used like this cheap supermarket soap. Those things are... Those feelings are still really important to me. And I hope now that I've shared those stories, I hope you can see how those things, I hope still come to life with the stuff that we do now. Yeah. Just bar soaps to me are like such a luxury, which is why I love making them.
Well, and now you're giving that experience to other people too, which I think is really beautiful too.
Yeah.
I love that.
Even when we were thinking about, you had said earlier, though, you do so many things as a brand, and it's problematic as well as interesting. Like, as I said, it was a very selfish brand. I just made stuff I wanted to use, but as a business, it's hard to do a multi-SKU business. We're a bit of a business, we're a bit of a beauty business, we're a bit of a candle business, we're a bit of a fresh produce business. And so it's hard for people, particularly like investors, to wrap their head around how that works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I came at the food stuff really, not really through taste at all, but also really through smell, especially when we started making coffee, which we roast every Tuesday. We were less, obviously we wanted it to taste good, but we're really like obsessed with how it smelled, like how that smell dripped through the house in the morning and how when I was making coffee every morning, which I do very early, it drifts across the kitchen and across the living room and into the bedroom. And really thinking about the trajectory of those smells across the house and the way the olive oil smells, all that stuff. It really was very much about not just how it tasted, but it was very much about how it smelled. And we don't often get the chance to talk about that, but I really wanted to just voice that because as a filter for a food brand, you don't often think about it smelling good as the first criteria. But for me, it really was about that.
I mean, isn't taste like 80% smell?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's experiential too, all of it. It involves your senses, of course, but it's just because it is directly involving your taste doesn't mean you can't consider all the rest of them too.
Yeah.
I love that.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. We really do appreciate
you,
it.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you for the tip. I'm going to try an olive candle. And I'm going to try a hardware store candle.
Yes. And fennel. Like, you got to give us that fennel.
Waiting on that olive candle.
Yes.
I became acquainted with the brand when I would see all of these, what looked to me like influencer care packages. And it was just like a box of beautiful fruit and produce.
Yeah.
It was the most gourmet looking spread. And then like a candle. And I'd be like, I want fucking fruit delivered in the mail.
Right.
That's what I want. Give me the mail fruit.
I think it was really cool to hear how scent plays a role in everything they do. And even if it's not like a scented product, but the way he was talking about the scents in the food and how smashing up tomato leaves led to what, like the biggest tomato scent in the industry right now.
I know.
Things feel very organic, no pun intended, but yeah, really neat.
It is neat. Also, he was telling us about how he worked so hard and burnt out, and then his like businesses fell apart during COVID. And I was like, I want that to happen to me.
I don't want anything to fall apart for me, speaking personally.
I
want to
work so hard and have everything fall apart and then have this beautiful house where I get to fucking make soap and honey.
I wanted to ask him though, okay, you were so burnt out from Chandelier and then you accidentally started a brand that then blew up. Like, so where does that lead you? You know what I mean? But he certainly seemed healthier and happier than he described himself prior. So he
tending to the goats is very different than like attending back-to-back board meetings.
That's fair.
I have this theory that not a theory, it's like probably a fact that I'm avoiding. I'm like, wow, I'd probably, my mood would be a lot better if I just got out of the house earlier in the day and felt some sun on my skin and just didn't immediately look at a computer or a screen until 3 p.m. Yeah, should probably do something about that.
One step at a time.
One step at a time. You know what? I have the whole world in my palm in this little device. I love it so much.
But that's the problem.
I know.
Coming from me, please.
Like you said, put down your phone, do something. Why do you think I have my orbs? Because I needed to put down my phone and do something. But orbs are not enough. Now I must have goats. Maybe somewhere in between goats. But yeah, it's going on the list.
Going on the list.
Yeah.
Amazing. Go check out Flamingo Estate if you have not already been acquainted. Even if you're not in the market for all the fun shit they sell, I will say, and I think I've said this before, maybe not, that their imagery and their campaigns are really second to none. I fucking hate this phrase, but the way that they do their world building is spectacular. Every deck that I create at work, I yank something from Flamingo and I know they're sick as shit of me, but listen, their stuff is beautiful. And even just as an innocent bystander, I think there's something, you know, you'll pull some joy out of it, some pleasure from the garden, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when they come out with an olive candle, you know where it came from.
A fennel candle, you remember my name.
Yep. Yeah, we really
should. But until
then. Really should have locked that down with the contract. Anyway.
I know, I was going to say. Collab.
Yeah. Hire us for consulting.
I think he's fine. He started Chandelier Creative. He's like, fuck off. You all
Oh, no. I just meant anyone who's listening.
Oh, anyone.
Anyway. Yeah. And until then, you can find us on our website, smellylater.live, where we have our merch, our Smelly Later hotline. You can follow us on Instagram at smellylater.mp3. I'm at Sabletooth Tigra.
I'm at Tynan Buck. And until next time, we will smell you later.